For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. I speak to you in the name of the Good Shepherd who serves his sheep. This morning's gospel features two of my favorite disciples, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, the Thunder Boys, as they were called. I imagine them to be big, burly fishermen, hands calloused from working nets and pulling oars, skin weathered by the sun. Because I have a son who is a fisherman, I wonder if their mother also had to have conversations about holes in the sofa created by fishing hooks. I realize not, but it helps me to think that she did. I love James and John too, because they at times can be like me, dumber than a box of rocks. The backstory before James and John approach Jesus in this gospel is big. Jesus has just preached the gospel readings we have heard for the past few weeks, hard ones. To attain eternal life, you must give it all up and follow him. It's easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to get into heaven. The first will be last, and the last will be first. Jesus has been laying out a life that does not look particularly victorious. Right before we pick up in today's reading from Mark, Jesus is explaining to the 12 that he is about to be arrested, condemned, put to death, and that he will rise 3 days later. So after all of what Jesus has just shared with them, James and John see fit to run up to Jesus and say, "Oh, hey, Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask, okay?" "Excuse me?" But Jesus must really love them, because he doesn't respond by knocking their heads together and telling them to go away. Instead, he asks them, "What do you want from me?" Then they tell him they want to sit at his right and left hand in glory. Again, what were they thinking? "Excuse me?" It reminds me a little bit of those "I'm a grown-up" conversations we've had with our own parents or our kids. The ones at the dinner table where the parent is sitting there, beaten down after a hard day at work and coming home to what can be crushing responsibilities of caring for a family, bone tired and weary. The kid in the house says something like, "You know, I've been thinking that I'm a grown-up now, and what I want from you is," and just here insert the huge, costly, fantastic request. And the parent looks at this kid. "So you're ready to be a grown-up? Work every day, pay your bills on time, figure out what to do when the car breaks down and your sister is sick and the upstairs shower is leaking through the dining room chandelier. This is what you're ready for? It's not what you think it's going to be." Jesus tells James and John that they don't have any idea what they're asking for, but he says they are in. They will drink from the same cup and share in the baptism he shares in. Then the other disciples get mad at James and John for asking Jesus this. Are they offended or are they jealous? I don't know. And instead of Jesus telling them all to get away from him and get themselves straight, he calls them closer. He tells them to be first. Trying to be first only makes you a slave. Serve others. This is not going to be the triumphant life that they seem to be imagining with their question. Jesus tries to help them understand that what they are signing up for looks a lot less like a victory bonfire and a lot more like a dumpster fire. They are to serve others so that they can find their place with him. Life with Jesus is not exactly what they are expecting. But here's the wonderful part. They do it. James and John step up to the life that Jesus had laid out, and parts of it were hard and miserable. James is the first martyr, killed by Herod. John is the sole apostle at the foot of the cross who tends to Mary, and then tradition has that he brings her into his home to care for her from that point on. They stayed all in. And they did it for the love of Jesus. James and John live into the grown-up life that Jesus has told them about, where those who seem to be the most fragile, the weakest, the last, those will be the very people who will show them his presence. Suffering and fragility are rough subjects to talk about, because like the psalmist today, we tend to want to think that our faith will keep us from too much suffering. Our pride leads us to think that if we are smart enough and capable enough and good enough, we can escape it. Of course, none of that is true. Suffering can be the result of poor or careless choices, but often it just is. There are so many ways that people can end up in last place. Circumstances of birth, poverty, systematic injustice, the unforeseen diagnosis, the discovery of the affair, the accident, the shift in a business model that leaves you out of work. It just is. There are just built-in defaults in our world which none of us can escape. In fifth grade, I did a science fair report on the San Andreas Fault and plate tectonics. Another way to tell this story is that my dad did a science fair project when I was in fifth grade on the San Andreas Fault and plate tectonics. Regardless, I did learn a lot. I can still see Dad describing how the Earth had these plates that sit above the core and they bump and glide along one another, sometimes causing earthquakes, sometimes crashing against each other, causing mountains to form, or colliding and dropping deep into gigantic valleys in the ocean floor. So when I came across an interview between Krista Tippett, host of the radio show On Being, and Xavier Le Pichon, one of the scientists who in the 1960s pioneered the thinking on plate tectonics, I was intrigued. What I found was the story of a man whose faith and understanding of suffering is complex and profound. Le Pichon was a French child living in Vietnam during World War II and spent time in the Japanese concentration camps before returning to France. He grew up a devout Catholic, going to Mass every day. His work to show that the Earth was comprised of plates that shifted not statically up and down, but as a constantly evolving system of pieces in relationship to one another was monumental. He says the morning that he finally confirmed that Hawaii was moving 8 centimeters toward Tokyo every year, he came down and told his wife he would be the most famous man on Earth. He was 29 years old. By age 36, Le Pichon experienced a profound crisis. He realized that his studies were keeping him away from humanity, from what was happening on top of those fantastic plates. And he did what many of us wish we could do or had the courage to do. He went to live with the Missionaries of Charity and Mother Teresa. He put himself, forced himself into a stance of servanthood to figure out how to realign himself. There, in the face of great suffering, he discovered that fragility is the essence of humanity, that fragility is the very heart of humanity, that the last really are first. All of the accolades that proclaimed him the best and brightest meant little in comparison to this new understanding. When Le Pichon returned to France, he moved with his family to a community called La Arche in Paris. It is still a functioning community today, where typically abled people live together with people who have mental differences. He moved himself again into a place where it would be abundantly clear that the last are first. He likens his experiences of learning about suffering to his study of plate tectonics in an interesting way. Le Pichon points out that at the lower levels of the earth, where it is much harder, the defaults, the fragile parts of the earth, are able to change without fracturing, which is to say, they are ductile, able to deform permanently, stretching and bending and spreading in response to the stress placed on the fragile spot. But closer to the earth's surface, the crust is cooler and thus more rigid. This is where the problems start. Without the ductility found below the surface, the plates collide and the defaults in the rocks cause big problems, like earthquakes. So when people or communities are less ductile, more rigid when encountering the fragility of human life, Le Pichon sees this is where the problems occur. We can approach the defaults with a rigidity, with a that's not the way it's supposed to be stance, and turn a blind eye to the fragility we are encountering. And we can end up crashing into others or ourselves, creating earthquakes and destruction. Or we can learn to be ductile, to let the default reshape us, permanently change us into a new way of being. I do not pretend to understand that much about the full nature of suffering or plate tectonics for that matter, but I do know this. The tectonic plates of my heart bump and grind, causing earthquakes and occasionally throwing up mountains on a regular basis. My own Richter scale would keep scientists on high alert. But when I can draw close to the gaps or the places where the defaults are found, if I can keep myself from becoming rigid with my own fears, my own needs, my own conceptions of how it is supposed to be, when I'm able to be ductile, when I'm able to let the experience of suffering I'm engaged in or the one I'm bearing witness to permanently change me, stretch and bend me into a new way of seeing Jesus in this world, it is quite a different experience. Things are rarely the way that I think they're going to be. I, like James and John, sometimes still want to see Jesus as a victorious king, fixing it all in one fell swoop, rather than the servant sent here to walk alongside us as we bump into the fragility of human existence together. Living a life with Jesus really can look a lot more like a dumpster fire than I want it to. But the truth is, there is just as much warmth from a dumpster fire as there is from a victory bonfire. And when I look around at those enjoying the bask of a dumpster fire with me, I find I'm in the company of others like me, all of us learning to be ductile, to be reshaped or permanently deformed. There in that company, I know I'm able to draw closer to a life with Jesus. So those Thunder Boys, James and John, were rough, burly lovers of Jesus, and they were ductile. Rather than hearing about the cost of living into a life with Jesus and hightailing it back to their boats, James and John end up all in. They let their experiences with Jesus change them, permanently deform them, forever reshape them. They became people they did not know they could be, the kind of people God needed them to be to bear his love out into the world. They truly become fishers of men, fishers of people, casting nets far into the ages that have brought many to the knowledge and love of Christ. They had front row seats to just what a life lived in suffering and serving for the sake of God's love looks like, and they chose to stay. And here we are this morning, continuing to try to follow along with them. May we have the courage to let ourselves, defaults and all, be permanently changed and shaped by the love of Jesus.